From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tomorrow at the Bank of America Colonial Open in Fort Worth, Texas, the world's top female golfer, Annika Sörenstam, will tee off against the men, the first woman to play in a PGA Tour event in 58 years. Sörenstam is tough and buff and devastatingly talented. So does she have the right stuff or even the right to play with the big boys? Tonight on Point, Annika and the course ahead for gender lines in American sport. We begin with a step-back look at the PGA. For that, we turn to sports writer and commentator John Feinstein. His new book is Open, Inside the Ropes at Bethpage Black. In recent months, there's been plenty of controversy in professional golf. First with the flap over men's-only membership at Augusta National, home of the Masters Tournament, and now with Annika Sörenstam. Earlier, I spoke with John Feinstein and asked him if all this focus on gender is good for the game.
I think this is. I don't think the Augusta mess was, but I think it's great when you have people talking about the game in a week when normally only we golf geeks would be talking about it. Annika Sörenstam is a great champion. She wants to move up to the next level. She's dominated at her level, and this is one of those unusual situations, Tom, where we actually get the answer to a bar argument. You know, how would a woman do in golf competing against the men? Tomorrow morning, we'll find out.
What are you anticipating? How are you thinking about it in advance, and where are you laying your wager?
The good news is I don't bet, Tom, because my last correct prediction in life was Nixon over McGovern. So I stick to kind of trying to talk to athletes and analyze what they do. But I really believe that she's going to have to play as well as she has ever played in her life, realistically, to have a chance to make the cut after two rounds. And it's not so much because the golf course is longer than what she's used to. It's because the greens are much quicker, the bunkers are more difficult, the rough is much higher around the greens than what she's used to. And she's going to face shots around the greens that she's never faced before. If she can handle that and handle all the pressure that comes with being in the eye of the storm this way, then she's got a chance. But that's a lot of ifs.
John, explain for listeners who may not be avid golfers exactly what making the cut will mean in this case and what it will probably require.
In this case, the Colonial is an invitational, so it doesn't play a full field. There are only 114 golfers as opposed to most weeks there are 156. But at the end of two rounds, the field will be cut to the low 70 scores and anybody who ties for 70th place. Mm-hmm. And that means essentially Annika's going to have to beat at least 43 guys in the field to make the cut. And usually the cut comes, depending on weather conditions, somewhere between one over par and three over par, which is 141 to 143. You know, that will be a challenge for her to shoot a number like that.
She chose this invitational very specifically, though. When she put out the signal that she might be interested in playing with the men, she got nine invitations. She chose this course because that long power shot may not be the deciding factor here?
Colonial's an older golf course. It's not as long as some of the more recently built courses. It's not necessarily a power hitter's golf course, as many of them are today. The other thing is, as I mentioned, it's a shorter field, only 114 players. And she knew that getting a sponsor exemption in this event, because it's an invitational, would mean not taking a spot away from one of the lower-ranking pros who normally might get one of those spots. She didn't want to take away anybody's spot in a full-field event.
John Feinstein, step back from this. What do you make of the fact that it's happening at all? Is this a kind of natural progression, a natural evolution of women's golf, or is Annika Sörenstam just a bolt out of the blue?
Oh, I don't think she's a bolt out of the blue. I think more and more you're seeing good players on the LPGA Tour. The Tour has struggled some in the last couple of years because it is a victim, as are many other events in golf, of Tiger mania, in the sense that many people believe that if Tiger Woods isn't in an event, it's not a real event. But I think you're seeing more and more good young men players and good young women players. And with the modern equipment, power isn't as much of a factor for the women because they can get the ball out farther in the fairway than they could in the past.
Is this opening to the public and this greater public interest, does it mean that golf will inevitably then be subjected to greater public scrutiny and input? Is it part of what's going on in the debate over Augusta and the Masters and even now over Annika Sörenstam and whether a woman should be playing with the men?
I don't think greater public scrutiny is a bad thing, Tom. I think that, and especially in golf, a sport that has lived for a long time in the 19th century. Hard to believe, but it wasn't until 1963 that the PGA of America had its whites-only clause removed from its bylaws. It wasn't until 1990 that Augusta National took in its first African-American member. We're still talking about getting women in there and at many other private clubs.
And, John, now both men's golf and women's golf have these very dominant players at the top. Just as a mental exercise, step back and compare Tiger Woods and Annika Sorenstam for us.
Similar in many ways in that they are both very narrow-minded and driven about their sport. Each wants to be the best whoever played. Tiger's goal, of course, has always been Jack Nicklaus and his 18 major titles. Annika wants to win more tournaments and more major titles than anyone who's ever played the game. She will go into the Hall of Fame this year on the women's tour after 10 years. She's met every eligibility requirement already, except for being on tour for 10 years. Usually it's the other way around. You get in your time, and then you have to win the events to make yourself a Hall of Famer. And I think their kind of dominance in many ways is good for a sport because people love dynasties. They love to root for and against dynasties. And Tiger and Annika are both dynasties right now in the sport of golf.
And what about the gender issue more broadly across sports? You follow many, John Feinstein. Women are getting stronger, faster. You look at the Williams sisters. The gap between male and female marathon runners is shortening. Can you imagine a time where professional sports is co-ed?
I'm not sure I'd go that far, Tom. I mean, there are going to be co-ed aspects to it. We're already seeing that. We're seeing it this week, obviously, at Colonial. I think we will see more and more of it. But completely co-ed, you know, I think, again, generally speaking, men are bigger, stronger, faster than women. There are exceptions. You're right. The gap is closing. In my lifetime, maybe in my daughter's lifetime, we might get close to that. But I think it's my honest belief that Title IX is the single most significant piece of legislation written in regards to women in this country since they got the right to vote. And that's why I felt that Martha Burke, when she got involved with the Augusta National issue, was off base, because the attack that Title IX is under from the Bush administration right now, to me, is far more significant than the notion of putting a wealthy woman into a green jacket at Augusta, symbolic as that may be.
And even if pro sports don't go co-ed, we can see we're going to have challengers who come up through the women's ranks. In your view, should they be embraced in golf, in other sports?
You know, Gary Williams, who's a basketball coach here at the University of Maryland, told me years and years ago that the thing he liked about sports as a kid, growing up, he grew up poor. And he said, when you get on a basketball court, on a golf course, on a baseball field, wherever it is, nobody checks to see how wealthy you are, what your color is, should be what your gender is. They just want to know, can you play? And that's what it should be. Can you play? The scoreboard doesn't lie. The clock doesn't lie. It tells you if you're good or if you're not good. That's the great thing about sports. It puts aside all these other cultural issues that infect our society. And I think, absolutely, if women can play at that level, why in the world wouldn't you want them involved?
John Feinstein, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Jonathan Feinstein is a sports writer and commentator for NPR. His latest book is Open, Inside the Ropes at Bethpage Black. He spoke with me from Washington. The Colonial Open gets underway tomorrow morning in Fort Worth, and who makes the cut there may prove to be a bigger story than who wins the tournament. The world's top female golfer, Annika Sorenstam, will take a big swing at history as the first woman to play in a PGA event since Babe Didriksson-Zaharias played in the 1945 Los Angeles Open. Sorenstam says she's playing in the Colonial to challenge herself, not to make a political statement.
My number one is always be a better player, and I'm looking for ways to get better. And I believe inside that I can still be a better player. And, you know, I pushed myself in the gym, I pushed myself on the golf course, and now I get an opportunity to play against the best men in the world. I figured this was really test me, and this was really push me to work harder and also play under tough circumstances. And that's what I call a test, to see if I can handle everything and also see if I can play the best game under really tough circumstances.
So there it is. If a woman can play at the level of male professionals, should she play with the men? Is Annika up to it? Is this a breakthrough or a publicity stunt? And do we still need gender lines in sport? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from the Colonial Golf Course in Fort Worth, Texas, is Tom Rinaldi, who's covering the tournament for ESPN News. Good evening and welcome, Tom Rinaldi.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us there. Also with us from Coral Gables, Florida, Robin Bakken, professor of history at the University of Miami, where she is on the board of the Center for Research on Sports in Society. Good evening and welcome, Robin Bakken.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Tom Rinaldi, set the scene for us there. What's been going on today at the Colonial Course? What's it look like right now?
Maybe the simplest way to set that scene would be to describe what it looked like to Annika Sorenstam as she stood on the first tee for a Wednesday Pro-Am. This is an informal round, Tom. Hmm. And she compared herself, the gallery that she encountered, in a round that doesn't even count, to the type of gallery she would discover if she were in contention to win a major championship on the LPGA Tour on the back nine on Sunday.
A crowd that big for something before the curtain's even raised.
And in absolutely terrible weather, a rain that was either downpouring or more than spitting for hours on end, turning the course soggy and very slow. In fact, Annika Sorenstam was only able to get 10 holes finished. It's an informal kind of scoring, but Sorenstam won a plus one for those 10 holes. But that's, again, an informal type of score. Her team was six under. So I think she had a chance to see a little bit more of the golf course, but she certainly had a taste of what that kind of gallery is going to be like for her, Tom.
But the real point, I guess, you're making here, Tom Rinaldi, is that here Annika Sorenstam is stepping out of the ladies' PGA into PGA land. And never mind all the money and attention, but even in terms of feet on the course, watching her play, it's just stupendously more than come out for women's even before the tournament begins.
It is, but remember, she is prepared in a way for this kind of stage because she has been here before, not in this kind of competition, but she was part of the Battle at Bighorn, a made-for-TV primetime event where she was paired with Tiger Woods. This was a few years ago, and there were 5,000 people on the golf course in the California desert following one foursome. And obviously, most eyes may have been trained on Tiger Woods, but Tiger Woods' playing partner that evening was Annika Sorenstam. And every player out there struggled that evening. It was not a tape that was sent to be enshrined down in the Golf Hall of Fame in Florida by any means. But at the same time, that sort of preparation may come in handy, at the very least, in dealing with the galleries.
Tom, what are you hearing in Fort Worth in the last day or two? We know Vijay Singh and Hal Sutton and others are on the record, at least for a while, as saying Annika Sorenstam shouldn't even be there. What's the talk around the course?
I think there's two different kinds of talk, Tom. The first is, I think the event, in the simplest sense, has done something that is hard to do, in a sense, in America. And I think that it has a pure, captivating quality. I think whether people are opposed to it, support it, etc., I think even very casual, marginal sports fans, Tom, are riveted. They want to know, is she going to make this cut? How is she going to perform? It's the first time in over half a century, and obviously the PGA Tour has changed, become intensely more lucrative, intensely more competitive, and much more scrutinized.
And there in the middle of it is Annika. Robin Bakken, I want to ask you just before the break here, we'll see how she does, and we'll talk about how she may do. What does this signify in larger terms? Does it? Does this say something about gender lines in American sport more generally, that Annika Sorenstam is there?
Well, I think what's most striking about this is the uproar that it's caused in any other venue in American society, whether it be politics, the workplace, higher education. We wouldn't question whether or not a woman deserves to be there. And yet sport is that last vestige of male dominance where there is a question, not even so much about her abilities or whether or not she can compete, but whether in fact she has a right to be there competing with the men on the tour. So I think it has great significance, not only for women in sport, but for issues of gender lines in society more broadly.
We're going to talk about that tonight. We're looking at Annika Sorenstam, top women's golfer, breaking gender lines to play with the men in Fort Worth, Texas, tomorrow at the Colonial Open. You can join the conversation. If Annika Sorenstam can play golf at the level of male professionals, should she be in men's professional tournaments? And if so, what does it mean for gender lines in sports, for boys' teams and girls' teams? And if not, if you think she shouldn't be there, why not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook, here tonight with Tom Rinaldi and Robin Bakken. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Annika Sorenstam, top women's golfer in the world, breaking gender lines to play with the men. My guests tonight are Tom Rinaldi, joining us from Fort Worth, Texas. He's a reporter with ESPN News and is covering the Colonial Open, where Annika Sorenstam will take to the greens, to the links tomorrow morning. And from Coral Gables, Florida, Robin Bakken, professor of history at the University of Miami, where she's on the board of the Center for Research on Sports in Society. You can join us, too. Does a woman on the links enhance or detract from men's professional golf? Does it diminish ladies' golf and the LPGA? Is this a breakthrough or a publicity stunt? And will it get you to do maybe the unthinkable? Watch golf on television. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. No offense, Tom Rinaldi and ESPN. But not everybody does it. Not everyone thinks either that she, Annika Sorenstam, should be playing at the Colonial. Vijay Singh took a lot of heat when he said Sorenstam had no business playing in the Colonial Open, and said that on the odd chance he gets paired with her, he would withdraw. He later said he was sorry if his comments came across as a personal attack, but he wasn't the only professional male golfer who didn't want Sorenstam to play. Here's what defending Colonial champion Nick Price had to say.
There should be a prerequisite. Sure, the sponsors can invite whoever they want, but qualifying is everything. Every single one of us that's out here has had to qualify. And I think that there should be maybe some stipulation in there. Say, no matter what gender you are, there's a qualification.
Tom Rinaldi, I want you to take us back to the buzz that's there right now. Do you hear, do you feel resentment? Has everybody learned that there's so much media attention on this that they can't say anything? Are people still muttering against a woman, no matter how terrifically talented, being included in the men's tournament?
Well, Tom, I think that's an astute point about what gets muttered versus what gets enunciated clearly in public. I think the PGA Tour represents probably the smoothest population of professional athlete when it comes to dealing with the media. There are just a handful who would be outspoken enough to publicly question whether Sorenstam really belongs here. But I think if you were to take paint with a broad stroke, I really do think you would find support for her as well as genuine curiosity. I think a lot of the PGA Tour players want to see, in fact, how she stacks up. Of course, none of them want to finish behind her, and roughly 40 or more will should she make the cut. But I do think she does have a majority support from the players.
And Tom Rinaldi, explain for listeners who may not know, we heard Nick Price there saying, well, she should qualify on her own count. How did Annika Sorenstam get in to the lineup for this tournament without formally qualifying? How does that work?
That's a good question, Tom. Obviously, for the PGA Tour players who are here, they've gone through what's called Q School, qualifying school, which enables them to then earn a PGA Tour card. But at every tournament which is sponsored, the sponsors are given a handful of exemptions, generally four. And Annika Sorenstam was given one of these exemptions.
In other words, they have certain spots they can give away to whomever they like.
Correct. Now, typically, they give them away to high-profile golfers who may not have otherwise qualified, college golfers, etc. But certainly no one can look at Annika Sorenstam's resume and what she has been able to accomplish and say that she is any less deserving than any number of other people who may have received exemptions in other tournaments in years past.
Tom Rinaldi, thanks for giving us the word right there from courtside this evening. Great to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Tom Rinaldi is a reporter with ESPN News. He's covering the Colonial Open. Robin Bakken, there's so much I want to talk with you about tonight. You've got your eye on the bigger picture here, but I want to stay with the immediate picture for a minute. Here's what the 2004 Ryder Cup captain of the American crew there, Hal Sutton, had to say about this, about Annika Sorenstam playing at the Colonial. He said, how can it be right if she takes up a spot in a tournament for a guy that is trying to make a living? I don't know what has happened to the world, he said. No one is content with what they are doing in their own life anymore. Robin Bakken, your thoughts, your response.
Well, first, I think an important point that John Feinstein made, which is that, in fact, she didn't take a spot away. She specifically chose this tour because it is an invitational. as Tom Rinaldi mentioned, the sponsors were given certain exemptions, and she was given one of those exemptions. So nowhere in the PGA Tour bylaws does it say that only men are allowed to compete. And there are other players, for example, past champions, who are given exemptions. So I think it's clear that she's not taking a spot away from a male player who would have qualified. But also, more broadly, this is the same kind of argument that we often heard about, for example, women being admitted to college, that somehow it's a zero-sum game, that if a woman is admitted to college, if a woman plays golf on the PGA Tour, that somehow that's detrimental to men. And in fact, I think that misses the broader picture about how these kinds of gender boundaries have been so entrenched in sport that we're unwilling to consider the broader social ramifications of that.
So are you suggesting, Robin Bakken, that what we ought to have here is a kind of unfenced open range or continuum where if women, by their time or whatever measure a particular sport has, are in range of men's sport, they should just progress right on into the midst of men?
Well, you know, I think for a long time, the qualities and values that were associated with sport were also those same values that defined masculinity. So questions about competitiveness, physicality, all these sorts of things have defined athletics. And so it didn't seem for a long time, for a century, that women fit into those categories. But in fact, we see that women are competing just effectively as men, in part because there are now new opportunities for them at all levels, largely as a result of Title IX.
Mm-hmm.
So while I agree with John Feinstein that, you know, maybe we won't see in the near future or even far future complete open competition between men and women, nonetheless, we don't want to see gender boundaries as kinds of boundaries that cannot be broken, because clearly in all venues within athletics, women are becoming stronger, faster, they're becoming much more competitive. And so in certain fields, it might make sense to achieve the highest level of competition that women, in fact, compete against men.
And yet those old images and ideas of men's and women's, boys and girls' locker rooms and teams and camaraderie go deep. I'm sure we haven't heard the last of the debate around Annika Sorenstam. Robin Bakken, standby. I want to welcome into our conversation from New York, Tara Grayville. She's senior editor at Golf Magazine. She's worked closely with Annika Sorenstam. She wrote the article She's Ready about Sorenstam for the current issue of Golf. Good evening and welcome, Tara Grayville.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks very much for joining us. Not everybody listening tonight may be an avid golf fan. Can you give us a sense of just how extraordinary a golfer Annika Sorenstam is?
Well, she's probably she's dominated her tour more than Tiger Woods has dominated him, if that gives any indication. A lot of people argue she's not just the best female golfer. She might be the best golfer based on her record. Of course, that is against her peers, not against the men. And she's a very dedicated, determined, and focused athlete. She is somebody who won 9 times a couple seasons ago and said, "How do I get better?" And she started this incredible workout regimen and then won 11 times last season and broke a slew of records on the LPGA Tour.
She's Swedish by birth and upbringing, came to the University of Arizona on a scholarship, I guess, and within a couple of years was just tearing up the courses in the U.S. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. I mean, there's a learning curve for Annika, not just in golf, but in dealing with the media and that sort of thing. And really, she's been playing here for a little more than 10 years, and she's just hit her peak the last couple of years. And I think that has a lot to do with physical conditioning, getting used to the courses, and also getting used to dealing with the press here.
She's been characterized in some odd ways, a cold, icy, silent assassin, robotic golfer.
Right.
Where does that come from, Tara Grayville?
Well, I think it comes from the intense focus she has on the course. I think people see what she's like on the course. They don't see her smiling. They don't see her waving at the galleries. And that's where the robotic golfer comes from. Off the course, she is a completely different person. I mean, I think to her credit, you know, she is so focused on the course. Just in the last couple of years, as she's become more comfortable and she's met some of the goals she's set for herself, we've seen a different side of her where she is more willing to let the press and the public in and show her personality a little bit. I think it's also a contrast to people like Nancy Lopez, who you know, in the 70s, she dominated tour, and she was also naturally gregarious, and not everyone is that way.
And I've got to ask you, when you say Annika Sörenstam may not be just the best female golfer, but the best golfer, what exactly do you mean by that? Are you suggesting that she might, in fact, win the Colonial Open, take the whole thing?
No. I said that's against her peers. I mean, that's based on her record. Tiger, I think, won out of every four or five tournaments, I'm not sure exactly, that he played last season. Annika won nearly half of the tournaments she played in. For a golfer, that's just an absolutely incredible record to win one out of every two or every three tournaments in a field against, you know, 150 other players is just, it's amazing. It's unheard of.
So, Robin Bakken, do we have here a golfer of such extraordinary talent that to cite Annika Sörenstam as an example of kind of merging lanes of men and women sport is unrealistic? I mean, is she so outside the mainstream that she's kind of in a class of her own?
Well, clearly she is an exceptional golfer in much the same way that Tiger Woods is an exceptional golfer. And whenever you have these kind of path-breaking events, you know, obviously you're taking somebody who clearly stands out against her peers, as Tara mentioned. But, you know, in the past, the same kinds of discussions have taken place when other female athletes have broken male records or have competed against men. When Gertrude Ederle became the sixth person to swim the English Channel, she broke the record of the five previous men. She clearly was one of the best athletes in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. And same with Babe Didrikson, the last woman to play on the PGA Tour. She was an extraordinary athlete. In fact, the Associated Press, as well as Sports Illustrated, named Didrikson as the top female athlete of the 20th century.
Yeah.
And yet, at the same time, when the press covered her exploits, they talked about what they called her hot resolve, her soaring confidence, her manly attributes, the same kinds of descriptions that we're still seeing today. When you talk about top female athletes, whether it be Annika Sörenstam or the Williams sisters.
And which in this context are kind of compliments and kind of digs.
Well, exactly, because I think, you know, on the one hand, it can be a compliment because it's suggesting that, you know, these women possess the kinds of characteristics that create clearly gifted and stellar athletes. And yet at the same time, there's an undercurrent of questioning their femininity, which I think is a long part of the history of women in sports. That is sport in and of itself something that's defined along gendered terms, and is it gendered male? And when a woman does compete effectively in sport, does that somehow take away from her femininity, or does it redefine the parameters of how we define sport?
Or does it rob men of something? I'm sure that's on some of the golfers' minds from the comments that I've read down there. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Dean's calling from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Hi, Dean. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good evening.
The question I have is in regards to, I'm an amateur, a very, very amateur athlete, and
right,
enjoy competition wherever I can find it, and enjoy competition against women also.
So are you a golfer, Dean?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I'd rather have somebody else chase the ball I hit.
All right. So what's on your mind?
Well, the question I have is, if you allow the barriers to be broken going one way, can they be broken going the other way? Because I wouldn't mind competing in the women's divisions where I would most likely clean up in what I do.
And what's your sport, Dean, out of curiosity?
I enjoy playing racquetball and bicycling.
So you believe you would clean up in professional women's bicycling?
In the same class that I compete in.
Right. But the question
class
does come up, and we've heard it before. Dean, thanks for your call. Robin Bakken, what about it, this idea? Well, if a woman's going to play in the men's PGA, why shouldn't the men step over to the ladies' PGA and mop the floor?
Well, you know, that's certainly a good question, and it gets down to this issue of whether or not the issue is breaking down gender boundaries and having men and women compete against one another, or if it's raising the level of competition so that all athletes who are capable compete at the highest levels. So clearly the reason why Annika is competing in this tournament, as she quite clearly stated, is that she wants to test herself and raise the level of her game. Now, if a man wants to compete in the LPGA or any other similar women's athletic organization, is the motivation behind it because he feels he can be more successful than he can with his counterparts, or is it because he's really trying to challenge himself as an athlete?
That's a high bar to clear, and I guess it's the right goal to challenge. And she's been very clear about that, saying this isn't political. I just want to keep stepping up, and this is a way to do it. Tara Grayville, I wonder what the word is in the golfing community. Let's say Annika Sorenstam makes the cut, and more than that, can you imagine that there would be first her and perhaps later a trickle and then maybe more one day of women all over the PGA tournament, that it would become essentially co-ed?
Yeah, I mean, if she does well here, there's nothing in the PGA Tour bylaws that prevents her from playing there, from trying to qualify. There's no men in the title, the PGA. Mm-hmm. It's open to anybody who can compete. So I think, you know, there are some younger players like Michelle Wee. She's 13. She's played in a lot of LPGA events and played well. She's also played in a lot of men's events and competed very well. She's 6 feet tall. She hits the ball 300 yards, and her stated desire is to play on the PGA Tour. And there's absolutely nothing stopping her from doing that if she wants to. I think it would be great if you saw a few women who, like Annika, who have pushed themselves and worked out and are able to compete, to go out there and do it.
But is there something in the culture of golfing that your magazine, Golf Magazine, kind of lives on, that has built itself around, at least in the PGA, around a culture of masculinity? Does it, and is anything lost if that's lost?
Right. I think that, I mean, the PGA Tour, they build themselves as kind of the gentlemen's, you know, the golfers, the players are gentlemen more than their athletes and that sort of thing.
Well, I'm looking at the first few pages of your current edition, and here's ads for, I see a big Hummer, I see an ad for Viagra. I mean, there's kind of a manly tone here.
Yeah, no, definitely. We're a men's magazine. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, I just think that the PGA Tour, in not restricting themselves to men only, I mean, it is open to anyone. And I don't think there's anything lost there. I think the few players who do feel threatened by this, they need to get over it.
Get over it. Robin Becken, how about it? Is it just like looking back in history, as you have, at the time when some colleges were all men, when private clubs were all men? If men enjoy playing together among men only, and women come up and crack the, you know, break in on their own talent, is it men's role just to get over it and learn to play across gender lines?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There was debate in the 19th century over whether or not women should be able to attend institutions of higher learning, because some physicians and social theorists argued that women had a limited amount of energy, and so if they expended their energy in intellectual pursuits, that would somehow threaten their reproductive capabilities.
And who would do the dishes?
That's right. And who would do the dishes? After all, then there would be concern that they wouldn't perform the functions of their sex, which, of course, had to do not just with reproduction, but also domesticity more broadly. These kinds of arguments appear ludicrous to us today, that we would question whether or not women are capable of pursuing intellectual achievement. And yet we still have this idea that sport is that last venue where it's really unclear whether or not women actually have a place.
Robin Becken, stand by. Tara Grayville, we have a lot of callers who want to join us. We'll let them after the break. We're talking about Annika Sorenstam, top women's golfer, breaking gender lines to play with men. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Annika Sorenstam, top women's golfer, breaking gender lines to play with the men. My guest tonight, Robin Becken, joining us from Coral Gables, Florida. She's at the University of Miami, professor of history, and on the board of the Center for Research on Sports in Society. And from New York, Tara Grayville, senior editor at Golf Magazine. You can join the conversation as well. Do we need gender lines in sports? Where should they be drawn? If Annika can play with the men, is there still a good reason for men to play without women? And what's after golf? Tennis? Soccer? Ice hockey? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Gabrielle's calling from West Newbury, Massachusetts. Hi, Gabrielle. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I just wanted to throw in that there is one sport where men and women do compete on the same level, up to Olympic level, actually, which is riding, show jumping, and dressage.
Yes.
And I'm not a golfer. I've never played. So I really can't speak for golfers, but I do not see why men and women cannot compete in golfing on the same level.
So your point is, if it's a sport where they can compete, they should compete.
Yes.
And do you see any value in any circumstance, Gabrielle, in gender segregated athletics? Once they've come into this terrain you're describing, where men and women can compete on the same plane.
Where they can, strength-wise and from skill level, can compete on the same level, I think they should. I don't see why not. There are certain sports, granted, that men and women, just from their strength and ability, it would be unfair if they would be competing against each other.
But if they can, you say bring it on. Gabrielle, yes. Thanks for your call. Robin Backen, how about it? Do you see this as a trend? Are we going to see this in other sports where increasingly it's just a matter of talent, not gender?
I think it's clear, as we mentioned earlier, that the gaps between men's and women's sports are narrowing, and there are particular sports like the ones that she mentioned, but also golf and tennis, where some of the top athletes, both male and female, could effectively compete against one another at some point in the future. So I think, you know, the question really is society willing to accept not just that women are becoming more competitive in this realm of activity that has traditionally, historically been associated with men, but, you know, do we also think that that kind of culture of maleness that structures many of these sports is something that can be broken down?
Can be broken down, should be broken down. I'm hearing in your comments, Robin, that you believe it should be broken down. Am I right?
You know, it's interesting because the history of women's participation in sport, particularly since the late 19th century, had to do with competing values. Women's sports and promoters of women's athletics, particularly in higher education, argued that, in fact, women's sports represented the true amateur ideal and that there were different values associated with it, that men's sports represented aggressiveness, competitiveness, individualism, whereas women's sports stressed cooperation, sociability, equal access, and participation.
Is that notion gone now or not?
Well, I think there are still some promoters of women's athletics who argue that there are different kinds of values that have structured women's participation in sport. But at the same time, as sport overall has become much more commercialized, it's very clear that those elements of competitiveness and commercialism are dominating all realms of sport, whether it be men's sport or women's sport. So, you know, I guess ideally I would say we want to look at the values that have traditionally been associated both with men's sport and women's sport and see how we can come up with a new set of values that encompasses them both and yet at the same time allows for competition among men and women.
It may be just a lack of imagination, but in some sports, it sounds like quite a challenge. Anu is calling from Minneapolis. Hi, Anu. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'm a big sports fan, and I play sports. I watch sports, not so much golf, but I just wanted to relate a story from my high school days when I used to wrestle.
Let's hear it.
During my freshman year, there was actually a female wrestler who competed against the men, and I remember my teammate going up against her, and she got pinned in the second round, and, you know, I was surprised that she lasted two rounds, but, you know, she got put in her place, and I'm not by any means saying that women can compete against the men. I actually admired her for doing so, but what my point is that, like, you know, if they feel they're up to it, they can do it. By all means, more power to them. And also, I think it would be actually kind of fun to see co-ed professional leagues, like for basketball and volleyball and things like that.
I know we've got it, and it sounds like you're taking care of the dishes there at the same time. So get them spick and span clean. Tara Gravel, maybe I'm missing something. Is golf an area in which there's less cultural divide between men's golf and women's golf than there might be in some of the other sports we're hearing about tonight?
Well, I don't think there's less cultural divide. I mean, you know, there is definitely the boys' club aspect to golf. I think things are slowly changing. But you know, I think if you asked Annika Sorenstam, you know, all she wants is to compete against the best and to compete at the best of her ability. And you know, if that means she's testing herself this week like she's never tested herself before. And I think that that takes a lot of courage. But I think in order for women to really to break through and to really sort of invade the boys' club or men's sports, it takes someone like Michelle Wee, who, I mean, from childhood has said, I want to compete against the men, against what have been considered the strongest players, the best players. And I think women in the past typically haven't thought that way. And here's someone, maybe because of someone like Annika Sorenstam, who is thinking that way and who maybe will be one of the first to challenge those ways of thinking.
And after decades of Title IX, it's not surprising to find young women thinking that way. I guess the question is how far it goes. Margaret's calling from Fredonia, New York. Hi, Margaret. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I guess, you know, what I'm thinking as I'm driving along the road here is that what I'm hearing is that the PGA is doing something they've never done before, and I have to question why they're doing that now. It seems like such a stunt, and, you know, you have to say, you know, why bring the circus atmosphere to a very refined sport? And, you know, does that in any way denigrate what Annika's doing? Because, you know, this is a great thing that women have more equal opportunity. But, you know, are they suffering? Is the PGA suffering? They're not getting the kind of attention they used to get.
So let me ask you before I put it to our guests, if it is a stunt, if it is a play for more television coverage, does that diminish it, Margaret? I mean, after all, Annika will still be on the course playing tomorrow morning. Does it make her own accomplishment any less in your mind?
I think it does. Because I have to ask myself, you know, would she have gotten this opportunity if they didn't need those ratings right now?
Yeah, Margaret, we got it. Thanks for your call. Terry Gravel, how about it? Is this seen as a genuine, door opening to the top woman player or just a way to pump up the ratings? And what difference does it make?
Well, I think it's a little of both, and I don't know that there's that much difference. I mean, let's face it, all sports are entertainment. The PGA Tour has a sponsor to please, the Bank of America, which is sponsoring the Colonial, and they want ratings for all their tournaments and events. And, you know, I think they'll, not just this week, but every week, they do as much as they can to get them.
So if Annika doesn't make the cut, does that mean, in your mind, Tara Gravel, that this was more about stunt than about a real opening? What difference does that make?
Oh, I don't think that at all. Half the guys aren't going to make the cut. Mm-hmm. There is no shame in not making the cut. Mm-hmm. Half the field misses the cut every week. So I think, you know, for her, it's definitely not a publicity stunt. Knowing her and how competitive she is, she truly wants to test herself in an arena with which she's unfamiliar. So obviously she's grasped the publicity aspect of this as well and rode the wave. But
she's got the picture, but still she's going to be there. She's going to be playing. Rubbing back, and last word goes to you. Do you see the gender line really moving in a substantial way in American sports, or do you see this as more of a one-off event?
Well, I think it's a little of both. It's very important to have these kinds of firsts take place. And so clearly, young women growing up today who are the beneficiaries of Title IX have a very different understanding and expectation of what kinds of opportunities they have, not just in sport, but in all aspects of life. So clearly, this is path-breaking. It's not just a one-time thing, I think. I think it signals to other women and young girls that, in fact, they have the opportunities now to compete at the highest levels.
Robin Bakken, no question, and a lot will be watching tomorrow. I want to thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Robin Bakken is professor of history at the University of Miami, and she is on the board of the Center there for Research on Sports in Society. And Tara Gravel, thank you so much for being with us from
New
York.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Tara Gravel is senior editor at Golf Magazine. You can continue the conversation online at onpointradio.org. Just click on forums. In a moment, a look back at the last woman to take on the men in a PGA tournament. This is On Point. When Annika Sorenstam tees it up at the Colonial Open, she will be the first woman in 58 years to play in a PGA event. The last woman to take on the men was Babe Didriksen Zaharias, a tremendous multi-sport athlete who was the Associated Press's greatest female athlete of the first half of the 20th century. Zaharias held her own against the men in several tournaments. When asked how she could regularly drive the ball 250 yards when she weighed barely 145 pounds, Babe would say, "You've got got to loosen up your girdle and let it rip. Her unapologetic athleticism and cockiness made her unpopular in some circles in her day, but her talent was beyond question. Helen Casper works at the Babe Didrikson Zaharias Museum in Beaumont, Texas. In this radio diary, she shares stories of Babe, beginning with her commanding performance in the 1932 Amateur Athletic Union National Track Meet, considered by many to be the greatest single performance in a series of events in the history of athletics.
She entered the track meet as a one-woman team. You know, the other members of the group all had teams, but she entered as a one-woman team. And she won first place over all of it. This also helped her get into the 1932 Olympics, which she won a gold medal in javelin, and she won in the hurdles. She won a gold medal. In high jump, she tied for first place, but they ended up giving her the silver medal for it. They named her the world's greatest, and I really believe that she is, in the sense that she done so many different sports and achieved medals and, you know, and trophies in all of them that she played in. High jump, javelin, she played tennis. Of course, golf was her main thing. She was an expert roller skater, bowler, and diver. And she played baseball. She played basketball. She won trophies and medals in all of them. She won 82 golf tournaments. She wanted to be first in everything, even driving a car. She didn't want people in front of her. Her brother says she scared him pretty much at times because she always wanted to pass everything. And she was a careful driver, but still, she wanted to be ahead of everything. I think some people didn't seem to not care for her because she was so good at everything she did. She knew it, and she didn't beat around the bush letting people know it. And if you took it for that, and she actually was in most everything, so, you know, give her credit where credit's due. In her day, in her era, women didn't do a lot of the things that she did. I think that was part of the reason she was got to be so well-known, because she played against men in a lot of things. And when she played in 1935 with Brian Nelson, there was two pairs playing, and she told her partner, which was a man, if he would help her, they would win. In her mind, she had to win, and they won. That was one of the first times that she played with against men in a that kind of a tournament. We get people from all over the world in here, and a lot of them they come here because, even out of the United States, because it is the Babe Museum. I'd say at least a third of the people that come in here are really Babe supporters, and they come in to see her stuff, and from all over the United States and out of the States. And they stay in sometime as long as 1.5-2 hours, just looking and reading everything.
Helen Cooper works at the Babe Didrikson Zaharias Museum in Beaumont, Texas. Babe Didrikson was the last woman to play in a PGA tournament 58 years ago. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Tamar Morad, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog, with help from Chris O'Connor and Sabi Mir. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR. We're funded by